Good morning. I guess you're all out there somewhere, right? We've turned down the lights so that you wouldn't be so hot, but I guess you're out there. So it's great to have you with us this morning, and it's great to wrap up our study in kingdom work today. We've been doing this all summer long. Let me begin by reminding you that the fall retreat is coming up and that registration for the fall retreat continues this week on the patio after the service and online. We are really excited this year to have a really great speaker who is much in demand, really across the country and around the world. Matt Michalatos is going to be with us. I've been dialoguing with Matt about what he's going to be speaking on. I'm very excited. He's going to be speaking on what makes faith in Christ so great, which I think is a subject that is relevant for all of us. I'd like to begin this morning by reading for you a fable. It goes like this. A man was sleeping in his cabin when the Savior appeared. The Lord told the man that he had work for him to do. He was to push on a large rock in front of his cabin with all of his might. So he did this day after day for many years. Each night he would return to his cabin sore and worn out, feeling that his whole day had been spent in vain. Seeing that the man was showing signs of discouragement, Satan decided to put thoughts into the man's mind, such as, "You have pushed against that rock for a long time, and it hasn't budged. Why kill yourself over this? You are never going to move it." This gave the man the impression that the task was impossible and that he was a failure. Those thoughts discouraged and disheartened the man even more. "Why kill myself over this?" he thought. "I'll just put in my time, giving just the minimum effort, and that will be good enough." The man planned to do this very thing. Have you ever felt that way in your vocation or in life in general, as if you were pushing against a rock? Do you feel that way now? Do you feel as if you're making no real progress, having no real impact? Interestingly enough, the rock is a key motif in the Jacob narrative, which we've been looking at the last couple of weeks. It shows up in many different places. But when Jacob journeys from the promised land, the land of Canaan, to Haran, he comes across a rock. There is this rock that is over this well. It's an enormous rock. And then he sees Rachel, his future wife, coming, sees her for the first time, and is in power, and he's incredibly strong, and he moves this enormous rock out of the way all by himself. So he's a strong man, and this is symbolic of what Jacob has been able to do in his life. He finds a rock, he's able to push it out of the way. And then in Haran, what happens? He meets a character by the name of Laban, and Laban is like a large boulder, and he cannot push Laban out of the way. Laban is an exploitative tyrant, and he manages to enslave Jacob for 20 years. So as I mentioned, we're wrapping up our Kingdom Work series, and this is an appropriate way to look at it, to consider the story of Jacob. I think the story of Jacob is the most significant story that we have of a worker working out his vocation in the entire Scriptures. So we looked at part one last week, Genesis chapter 30, the last part of Genesis 30, and now we are looking at Genesis chapter 31 today. And now what happens for Jacob, we saw last week that finally he was able to make some inroads with his relationship with Laban, and he was able to take this small flock, and he was able to take it to make it grow. This flock of abnormally colored animals, he was able to breed them, and then this flock becomes large and strong. And now in Genesis 31, what Jacob does is he looks back on his years of toil in the land of Haran, 20 years of toil. And he has this perspective, and ultimately he's able to have a theological perspective. So therefore, he grants us a perspective that we sorely need concerning our vocations in the Silicon Valley. So let's begin with Genesis chapter 31, verse 1. We're going to look at certain sections in Genesis 31. We'll bypass certain sections in order to summarize it, but we will maintain the narrative thread. Genesis 31, verse 1. "Now Jacob heard that the sons of Laban were saying, 'Jacob has taken all that was our father's, and from what was our father's, he has gained all this wealth.'" He has backbiting co-workers. And Jacob saw that Laban did not regard him with favor as before. Then the Lord said to Jacob, return to the land of your fathers and to your kindred, and I will be with you. That's return to the promised land. So Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah, his two wives, into the field where his flock was, and said to them, I see that your father does not regard me with favor as he did before. Not that he ever did, but he's taken a turn for the worse. But the God of my father has been with me. You know that I have served your father with all my strength, yet your father has cheated me and changed my wages 10 times. But God did not permit him to harm me. If he said, the spotted shall be your wages, then all the flock bore spotted. And if he said, the striped shall be your wages, then all the flock bore striped. Thus God has taken away the livestock of your father and given them to me. In the breeding season of the flock, I lifted up my eyes and saw in a dream that the goats mated with the flock were striped, spotted, and mottled. Then the angel of God said to me in the dream, Jacob. And I said, here I am. And he said, lift up your eyes and see. All the goats that mate with the flock are striped, spotted, and mottled. For I have seen all that Laban is doing to you. I am the God of Bethel, where you anointed a pillar and made a vow to me. Now arise, go out from this land and return to the land of your kindred. So Jacob has this proposal for his wives, and his wives agree. So notice he has jealous co-workers, Laban's sons. And what happens with this? It ends up moving Jacob in the direction of God's choosing. He wouldn't choose to have jealous co-workers, but the fact that he has them causes him to think differently about his vocation and causes him actually to move in the direction that God planned for him to move in. The Lord says, return to the land and I will be with you. And the Lord has been with Jacob all along. He's been present with him, with his presence and his power and his love. And now he promises, if you obey me and return to the land, I am going to be with you in a powerful way. Now Jacob, in order to disclose his plans to his wives, takes them out into the field. Now that is another key motif in the Jacob narrative, the field. Now his brother back home, Esau, was a man of the field, but Jacob was not a man of the field. He was a homebody. But in Haran, he has learned how to be a shepherd. He's been out in the field all of the time, and he takes his wives out into the field. He now has become something that he wasn't before. He has become a man of the field. Laban has been out to get him right from the beginning, and Laban has been able to enslave him and rein him in and change his wages and treat him unfairly. And finally, though, everything that Laban does blows up in Laban's face. It backfires, and it works actually to Jacob's advantage. Jacob is able to grow this flock. It's able to increase, but he sees that it is all the responsibility of God. God has enabled him to do this. It is not Jacob in his own creativity and his own brilliance that's been able to pull this off and grow this flock. No, he's able to see that it is God who has increased the flock. Jacob saw what Laban was doing to him. He saw what Laban was doing. Everything that Laban was doing, he saw. But now he has this dream, and in this dream, he's able to lift up his eyes and see that God sees what Laban has been doing to him. He's able to see that God sees, and he's able to understand that God is revealing himself to Jacob in this very dark and difficult place, that is, the land of Haran. And what happens for Jacob? He emerges as a man of faith. He wasn't a man of faith when he came to Haran. He had a very checkered relationship with the Lord. He wasn't really in the line of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob in terms of the faith of Abraham. He really didn't embrace the God of his fathers. But now, as he's getting ready to leave Haran, he recognizes something has happened and something has changed within him, and he has become a man of faith. So there may be those in our lives who intend harm against us. There may be employers who intend to harm us. There may be coworkers who intend to harm us. But the reality is, if the scriptures are true, they can't touch us. God is going to use everything that they do to our advantage. It's going to backfire if they actually want to bring us harm. Oh, we may feel the repercussions of it, but watch how God uses all of that stuff. Watch how God turns all of that stuff into good. Notice here how the jealousy of the co-workers causes Jacob to move in the direction of God's choosing. God can do the same thing with us. He can use backbiting, jealous co-workers to actually motivate us to think differently about the workplace and to move us in the direction that he has been planning for us all along. And what is it that God promises in our vocations? The same thing he promises concerning our entire lives. He promises to be with us, to be present with us, with his power, with his love, so that we may know him, so that we may follow him. He makes something of us that we weren't before, just as he made Jacob a man of the field. And God is committed to doing this. He joins with us in our vocations. He joins with us in our entire lives to transform us so that we become something that we weren't before. It is easy to look out onto the world and to look out on your vocation or on your workplace and to see what the Labans of this world are doing. It is easy to see what the sons of Laban are doing to us. It is not as easy to see that God sees. It is not as easy to see that God understands. It is not as easy to get that heavenly perspective on what is going on here and all the difficulty that you are encountering. But God is committed to giving it to us. He gives Jacob a dream. He might give you a dream, but he might give you some other way of looking at your current circumstances. So, women and men of the church, lift up your eyes as if God were giving you a dream right now. Lift up your eyes and see. See that God sees. See that God sees, that he cares, that he knows everything that's going on, and he's going to turn everything that's going on into the advantage of his followers. He specializes in revealing himself to us in hard places. So if your vocation is a hard place right now, watch for how God shows up. Watch for how he reveals himself to you in that place. And God is committed to using the harsh conditions of our vocations in order to shape us so that we become increasingly men and women of faith. When I was about in my mid-20s, I was working as an editor for a weekly newspaper, and they brought in a new publisher, and we didn't exactly see eye to eye on the vision for the newspaper. I didn't think the differences were that great. Every once in a while, she would call me into her office, and we would talk about things, and I would leave, and I would go back to my work. One day, she called me in for what I thought would be a regular meeting, and she informed me that my services would no longer be needed. She informed me that I was fired. And I didn't know what to make of all of this. I was shocked. I did not see this coming at all. And I didn't know what was happening. Was God using this to move me in the direction of his choosing? Was God making me something that I wasn't before? Was God revealing himself to me in a hard place? Was he shaping me somehow for his purposes? I have to tell you, I didn't know. All I knew was that I was joining the ranks of the unemployed. Back to the Jacob story. Now Jacob finally senses an opening and he flees. He runs, he goes back to the promised land, or at least he begins his journey back to the promised land with his whole entourage, with his whole family. But before he leaves, Rachel, one of his wives, steals Laban's household idols. Now this is not a very good idea for multiple reasons, and this is going to get Jacob into problems a little bit later. Genesis chapter 31, verse 22. When it was told Laban on the third day that Jacob had fled, he took his kinsmen with him and pursued him for 7 days and followed close after him into the hill country of Gilead. That's on the border of the promised land. But God came to Laban, the Aramean, in a dream by night and said to him, "Be careful not to say anything to Jacob, either good or bad." So Laban gets wind that Jacob has fled, and what does he do? He takes up the chase. He pursues Jacob, and eventually he overtakes him. But before he does, the Lord gives Laban a dream. And in that dream, the Lord tells him, in so many words, don't touch this guy. Leave this man alone. It's not going to be good for your long-term health if you mess with Jacob at all. So that's the nature of the dream. Laban overtakes Jacob, and then he says, why did you leave? We had such a good relationship back in Haran, and we were having such a good time. And if you really wanted to leave, why didn't you tell me? I would have thrown a party for you, and then you could go off and just with bells and whistles and celebrations and everything. We could have done something like that. And of course, he doesn't mean any of it. But he does tell Jacob this. He does tell Jacob at the end of his little speech, which we're not looking at, that I got this dream from the Lord, and the Lord warned me in the dream to treat you well, to not harm you in any way. And so Laban recognizes that he's met his match, not so much in Jacob, but in the God of Jacob. The God of Jacob is more powerful, he recognizes, than he himself. And so he finally then yields to the Lord. But he says this, why did you steal my household idols? What's up with that? And Jacob says, what do you mean, dude? I didn't steal any idols. And if you want to, you could go search everything. If you find the idols, we're going to kill whoever stole the idols. And Jacob is absolutely convinced that no one has stolen the idols. He doesn't know that Rachel has stolen the idols. So he puts Rachel at risk, and he doesn't know it. So Jacob says, check everything. What does Laban do? Checks everything, goes through the tents, goes through everything. Finally, he comes to Rachel, who was seated on a horse, and it turns out that underneath the saddle, that's where Rachel had hidden the household idols. And she says to Laban, forgive me, my lord, I cannot come down right now because the manner of woman is upon me. In other words, she's having her period, so she can't get off the saddle, and she's hiding the idols underneath the saddle. She's having her period, and I have no further comments. So, even if you manage to extricate yourself from a very difficult vocational situation, your future still remains uncertain, doesn't it? And is it possible, you wonder, is your past going to come back to haunt you somehow? Laban from Jacob's past took off after Jacob to track him down. Is it possible that something from your past is going to haunt you? Is it possible that there is some hole in your resume that is going to be discovered? Is it possible that some hypocritical employer from the past is going to give you a bad reference? Is it possible that someone else's mistake under your watch is going to do you in, the way Rachel's mistake threatened Jacob? Is it possible that someone, some employer, is going to rifle through your social media posts and discover something that you wish you hadn't posted and it's going to cost you? We may be worried about those things concerning our present and concerning our future. But notice what happens in this story. God overcomes everything in the story to get Jacob where he wants Jacob to be. He overcomes Laban. He overcomes Laban's sons. He overcomes Rachel's mistakes. He overcomes Jacob's own mistakes, Jacob's own rash decisions. You see, what God can do in your life, he can overcome everything, all of the obstacles, even your own rash decisions and even your own mistakes, to do exactly what he wants to do in your life and to get you where he wants you to be, even if you have to live with certain consequences. How do you think Jacob now feels about Laban? Have you ever wanted to unload on a supervisor? Confess, you have. Have you ever fantasized about it? Have you just found yourself daydreaming without even knowing about it, and all of a sudden you caught yourself and you had been about a minute into a speech that you were rehearsing in your mind that you really wanted to let go, you really wanted to unload on your supervisor? Okay, now's your opportunity. I'm going to give you pastoral permission to unload on your supervisor, to feel it right here, right now, because this is what Jacob does. And what we want to do is we want to enter into Jacob's life and to feel what he feels. Now, Jacob finally has the advantage. He recognizes that the tables have been turned, and he unloads on Laban. He does something that he couldn't do all those years. And we don't unload on supervisors because, well, let's face it, if we do, we're worried that it's going to cost us. And what's more, we think we're supposed to be nice to people, even mean supervisors, and so we don't do it. But now, here's your opportunity. Maybe the tables are turned, and now you just want to feel what you feel. Okay, you ready? Genesis 31, verse 38. This is you speaking to the supervisor. These 20 years I have been with you. Your ewes and your female goats have not miscarried, and I have not eaten the rams of your flocks. What was torn by wild beasts I did not bring to you. I bore the loss of it myself. From my hand you required it, whether stolen by day or stolen by night. There I was. By day the heat consumed me, and the cold by night, and my sleep fled from my eyes. These 20 years I have been in your house. I served you 14 years for your two daughters and 6 years for your flock, and you have changed my wages 10 times. Feels good, doesn't it? Are you finished? Well, if you are, then you're one verse short of a good speech. With verse 42, the entire Jacob-Laban story comes to a climax. Let's read this. He says this to Laban, "If the God of my father, the God of Abraham and the fear of Isaac," that's another word for God, "had not been on my side, surely now you would have sent me away empty-handed. God saw my affliction and the labor of my hands and rebuked you last night." With these observations, Jacob summarizes his entire time in Haran. And now he has a heavenly perspective. Now he has a biblical perspective on his vocation. He didn't have that earlier. Now he does. And he recognizes that God has been for him all along. And he has not left empty-handed. In other words, God has given him a tremendous amount, not least being the livestock that he is leaving with. He has not left empty-handed, and he recognizes that God has seen his affliction and the labor of his hands, and that God has helped him. It's been hard. It's been excruciatingly hard for 20 long years, but he recognizes that God has been with him. So Jacob and Laban finally make peace and go their separate ways, and Laban allows Jacob to resume his journey back to the promised land. So see that God sees. See that God sees what's going on in your life. See that God sees what's going on in your vocation. Especially see this. See that God shapes us for his purposes. God shapes us for his purposes. In your vocation, that's what God is doing. God not only wants to work through you, the greater work he wants to do is in you. We have the outward focus of how we want to serve God, perhaps, or what the great things we want to do in this world, but never forget that the greatest work that God wants to do is not out there, it's in here. He wants to do a work in your heart. And if he does that, he's got someone he can work through. And if you look at your life, and if you look at your vocation, you'll be able to see this with the help of God. If you look hard enough, God has been faithful to you. He has been faithful to you in your vocation, even if it has been oppressive at times. You have not left empty-handed, and you will not leave this place empty-handed. God is working with you. He is working to make you a man of faith. He is working to make you a woman of faith. And you will thus emerge. You will emerge with a faith that, in the Apostle Peter's words, is more precious than gold. And that's what counts, my friends, the faith that is more precious than gold. And when you inherit the New Jerusalem, that is the new creation, you will go to a place where, in the vision of the Apostle John in the book of Revelation, they pave the streets with the gold that this world values. God has seen your affliction and the labor of your hands, and he has helped you. He has come to your aid. You can say, it has been hard, but God has been with me. Now, will you serve the Lord in your vocation? We've been talking about that all summer long. You're serving the Lord in your vocation. Let's look once again at Colossians chapter 3, verses 23 and 24. Whatever you do, work heartily as for the Lord and not for men, not for Laban. You're working for the Lord, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the inheritance as your reward. You are serving the Lord Christ. Serve Christ in your vocation, and then watch for the opportunity to tell your story. So, here's my story. I was fired. Now, if you're going to lose a job, you want to lose a job in July, because that gives you the opportunity to go camping and fishing in Idaho and Montana and Wyoming and Yellowstone for 6 weeks. And that's exactly what I did. I decided just to take off before starting to look for a job. Actually, when I went camping and fishing, I was looking for a job along the way. I had a couple of interviews, which is kind of interesting, because for an interview, you want to dress nice, or at least you did back then. And I've got camping and fishing clothes and stuff, so it was very interesting applying for a couple of jobs along the way. But I camped and I fished, but more importantly, I met with God. I had to confront what was going on in my own heart, which was bitterness. I was bitter over being fired. So I came back to the Bay Area and began looking for a job. It wasn't easy. It wasn't easy necessarily to find jobs in the journalism field, working for newspapers, but that's what I felt called to do still. So eventually, God opened the door for me to have a job as an editor in Pleasanton over in the East Bay. And it was a better job than the one I had left. It was a better paper, working for better people, and it was really ideally suited for me. But here's the more interesting thing. At about the same time that I got this job, I felt within me this burning desire to serve the Lord in some way that I didn't understand. Also about that same time, just before I moved to Pleasanton, my former youth pastor, who had moved away to Washington, moved back to the Bay Area and came to Pleasanton. And he was serving as a youth pastor at this church in Pleasanton. Right about the same time, I had a burning desire to serve. So I called him up, made an appointment, said I have a burning desire to serve. I'm about 27, 28 years old at the time. And what do youth pastors do when they hear those kinds of words? I have a vision for your life. I want you to serve in the youth ministry. And that's exactly what I did. So I had been more or less taking up space in the pews as a believer in Jesus Christ for about 12 years, when finally the Lord said, you got to do something with this. You're learning an awful lot. You have to put it into practice. And so I began studying the scriptures. I began teaching high school students. I began teaching college students. And this thing was happening in my heart about what God was doing in this heart for people and this heart for kids, which I really didn't know before. And I started spending more time studying the Bible and hanging out with high school and college students than I was actually doing my real job. And so one thing led to another, and people said, we see these gifts in you. And then it opened up this whole new vista for me to become a pastor, which I already was, by the way. You don't have to be a pastor, paid as a pastor, to be a pastor. Just ask Steve Zeisler, not making anything anymore. Still a pastor, right? You know it, right? So I was a pastor before I became a pastor. But then there was this shift. And so if I look back now on getting fired, and I look what came of it, I can't believe what happened. I can't begin to count. I can't begin to fathom all of the things that God did through that, especially in my own heart. Indeed, God was moving me in the direction of his choosing. He was making something of me that I wasn't before. He was revealing himself to me in a hard place. He was shaping me for his purposes. And I can tell you, it was hard, but God was with me. That's my story. What's your story? If you look hard enough, I'll bet you have a similar story to tell. Speaking of stories, remember the fable of the man whom God called to push against the rock? Remember that he was discouraged? Remember he thought that he was thinking about just giving the minimum effort? Before doing that, however, he made it a matter of prayer. He said this to the Lord, "Lord, I have labored long and hard in your service, using all of my strength to do that which you have asked. Yet after all this time, I have not even budged that rock half a millimeter. What is wrong? Why am I failing?" To this, the Lord responded compassionately. And here's what the Lord said to the man. "My friend, when long ago I asked you to serve me and you accepted, I told you that your task was to push against the rock with all of your strength, which you have done. Never once did I mention to you that I expected you to move it. Your task was to push. And now you come to me, your strength spent, thinking that you have failed. But is that really so? Look at yourself. Your arms are strong and muscled. Your back sinews are brown. Your hands are calloused from constant pressure. And your legs have become massive and hard. Through opposition, you have grown much, and your abilities now surpass that which you used to have. Yet you haven't moved the rock. But your calling was to be obedient and to push and to exercise your faith and trust in my wisdom. This you have done. I, my friend, will now remove the rock."